Hello and welcome to episode 7 of URN Sports Sticky Wicket. I'm joined by Joe, Turan and Harry. So we're going to talk today about the North-South series, Bangladesh beating Sri Lanka and then some of the test sides. So should we start with the North-South series? The South squad concluded the North-South series yesterday with another win to finish the series 3-0, which included a win by 10 wickets in the first match of the series. Should we start by talking about the South squad? So we'll go to Joe first. So who were some of the big names on display and who do you think has, you know, an England call-up on the cards perhaps in the coming year?
Yeah, I think maybe Mason Crane is someone they're going to be looking at because I think we're so short of spinners, and I think Mason Crane played for New South Wales recently, which is a big deal as well. So he's definitely one to watch. I think David Milan can count himself fairly unfortunate that he's never had an England call-up. I think he scored runs again in this series. So yeah, they were two that the lads who did really well. I think Sam Northeast as well is another one who's maybe pushing for an England call-up. But England's batting so strong at the moment that I think we're in a bit more in need of bowlers than batsmen. So yeah. If there's bowlers who've taken a claim, then they'll be the ones who may get a call-up.
I think Bell Drummond as well, he batted really well. But I think England have a lot of openers now with the emergence of Hamid and Jennings. So I think it'll be difficult for him to get into the test team, but definitely one for the future maybe.
Yeah, I saw, was it Crane took 4 wickets for one run the other day or something like that? And you've got a few names in that squad. You mentioned Milan, but also you've got Dawson, who's kind of around the squad, Finn and Toby Rowland-Jones, who are all sort of, you know, a bit older than the other guys, maybe towards like 30s more than 20. Do you think any of those guys have a shout with being in, or do you think
Dawson will be definitely pushing Marinelli in the summer. I don't think Marinelli's performances have been okay with the ball, but with the bat I'm not really sure what he's been playing at.
Do you think that in both test and ODIs, or just
no, just ODIs in the summer for the championship? I don't think Marinelli's placed on the threat in the test, so he's done quite well, but yeah, I think ODIs he needs to be looking over his shoulder a little bit.
I think in ODIs, Marinelli really has an identity problem. He doesn't really know whether he's a batter or a bowler at the minute. I think England's team should just tell him, you're here to bowl, and if you can score some lower order runs, then that'll be helpful. Because at the minute, he seems to go for 60 odd off his 10 overs and doesn't really contribute at number 7 or 8, wherever he bats.
And there's Tom Curran as well, who was picked for the North-South squad. He got a call-up for the injured Jake Ball in the England West Indies series. Do you think he's next cab off the ranks, or do you think there are people who are like ahead of him, better than him?
He's a South African, isn't he, so he's probably in with a shout because we seem to like thinking anyone who's born in South Africa. No, in all seriousness, he's obviously very talented, and obviously I think he's a next seamer, especially in the one day side, who I think we'll see. Maybe not in the Champions Trophy, but maybe against Ireland in the warm up games, he might.
And there's Sam as well.
Yeah, Sam Curran's very talented as well. Yeah,
yeah, I think a couple more years' development. I think Tom's a couple of years older. Mm. I think he's around our age, 21, 22. So just about ready for international cricket, but with Sam being 19, 20, he's not ready yet, yeah. I don't think, because he's still quite a small guy, and he's quite a slow-paced bowler, really, and he might get taken apart on the international circuit. So a couple more years of training, especially if he's in the England Lions squads in these North-South games, and maybe even, as Joe says, some games against the lesser nations, like Ireland and Afghanistan, and he could be in the squad, definitely, two brothers.
Perfect. We'll move on to the North, and with two hanks here, I think that'll be more comfortable to talk about these guys. So obviously they had a much less successful series, but when you look at like the team that they have on paper, it is a very good squad that they put out. Do you think that there's any particular reason that they lost? Do you think there's a particular disparity between the two sides, or do you think it just didn't come together on the day?
I think that they struggle to contain the South. The bowling was a bit weak, other than maybe Mark Wood. There wasn't particularly many standout bowlers. It's quite a very inexperienced attack. With a bat, I think they threatened but never really got going. I think Ben Duckett got a lot of starts but didn't really go on. Liam Livingston again got some starts and didn't go on. But let's be honest, if the North, if the proper North played the South, is in like, I think Yorkshire on their own could beat the South. Never mind, like, you know, the likes of Joe Root were playing, but no, we won't go into that. But no, they were resoundingly beaten. But it wasn't really about the result; it was more about sort of development. And
I mean, the big player for the North was Tim Bresnan.
Yeah, he's a solid operator, even though he's from Yorkshire. But
he could still get a place in the England team.
I was going to say he had a hell of a season for Yorkshire last year.
He's becoming like an even better batsman than he is bowler. Yeah, I mean, if we were short of a bowler and we just needed a surprise call, I don't think it would ever happen. But he is still England quality, and that must be such a boost for Yorkshire in the county championship.
And who do you think from the North squad, again, who do you see having an England future?
Probably Liam Livingston. I think we mentioned on the last episode of Sticky Wicket, Liam Livingston's got potential to be an England player. And Mark Wood, of course, coming back from injury.
And obviously Mark Wood is a shoe-in for when he's fit again. Who do you think in the current England squad's going to miss out in place of Mark Wood, or do you think he's going to be sidelined?
I don't think Stephen Finn did enough in this North-South series to show Andrew Strauss that he's going to be good enough already for the Champions Trophy. He did quite well in the West Indies, but I mean, that was pretty poor opposition out there. I think Ben Duckett sort of took Finn to pieces a little bit in the series, so I think he'll drop out for Wood.
Finn as well, I think that he just doesn't bowl quickly enough anymore. Yeah. He used to bowl 90-odd mile an hour, now it seems just like he's a tall guy who bowls 85, and we saw that with Boyd Rankin in Australia. It's just not enough.
He's too floaty,
just floats the ball up.
Yeah.
And he's not really the same bowler as old, who was fastest to 100 test wickets or 50 test wickets, I think. So.
Yeah, I think a few years ago when we took him out of the Ashes squad, when we were getting battered anyway, it really affected his confidence. He's lost all his pace. I personally hope we don't go back to picking him because he's not good enough at the moment to be an England bowler when there's a Mark Wood out there who's much, much quicker and much more effective and probably has a better economy than Stephen Finn, who goes all over the park.
Okay, so we're going to move on now to the Bangladesh v Sri Lanka series. They celebrated their 9th ever victory in Test cricket by beating Sri Lanka in the second Test by 4 wickets, celebrating their 100th Test in style. So, having beaten England in October and now beating Sri Lanka, do we think that Bangladesh are finally on their way to becoming a competitive Test side?
Especially in the subcontinent. I think if you look at the likes of Shakib Al-Assad, I don't think there's maybe Ashwin, but there's not a better all-rounder in those conditions, I don't think, than him. So they've got a lot of good players. That Mushfiqur Rahim is very talented as well. And they've got some good bowlers like Mehdi Hasan, who burst on the scene against England, who's continued to take wickets against Sri Lanka. So especially in the subcontinent, they're going to be a force. I think they've still got a long way to go when they're outside the subcontinent against the ball that's swinging and stuff like that. But no, it's really good to see there's another nation that's getting to the same level as the likes of England and Sri Lanka.
Also, I think they've got a lot of good young batsmen coming up, and they seem to sort of make a production line of batsmen. I think you've got someone like Soumya Sarkar, who's a very good player, and Shabir Rahman, who was also a good batsman in subcontinental conditions. Again, I think they just need more experience overseas, and I think some of the big sides should host them for a 3-4 match series so they can really improve. So maybe England host them for a summer and Australia for a summer as well. I think that'd be really beneficial for them.
They're starting to find a winning formula, which they haven't had for like 20 years, and winning a couple of test matches in this short period must mean it's their most successful period of test cricket ever, which must be so good for the nation at the moment.
Yeah, one more point as well. I mean, for them to go away from home as well, even though it was some continent, to win in Sri Lanka, I mean, we saw the Australians get absolutely demolished in Sri Lanka not very long ago. So yeah, it was a big, big win. I think they'd struggle to get a win in Sri Lanka at the moment, so good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, I mean, Shakib Al-Hassan in that game, just with the bat and the ball, just destroyed Sri Lanka, really. Do you think it was a weakened Sri Lanka side in any way, or do you think Bangladesh were just good enough?
It definitely wasn't a weakened Sri Lanka side. I think Sri Lanka really struggled since sort of the retirements of Sangakkara and Jay Wardner. I think they have got some good batsmen with Chandamal coming through, but ultimately they haven't really replaced what they lost. And in effect, you've still got Herath really carrying the team, and ultimately it wasn't really enough in the Bangladesh game to see them through as it was in the first test.
But yeah, they are a team going through transition, so but they are still pretty formidable at home. So it was a very good win, but as I said, they are a team going through transition a little bit.
Yeah, as Joe said, they still beat Australia 3-0, or was it just a year ago now? Less than a year ago, and for Bangladesh to get their first ever win in Sri Lanka is a pretty amazing feat, I think. Hopefully going forward, they can even be a force. I think they're in this year's Champions Trophy ahead of the West Indies, which is a big, big step towards becoming a major nation. That's obviously a different format, but all round, Bangladesh are improving massively.
Yeah, definitely. They're a big banana skin in world competitions. So you mentioned Australia there, so we'll move on to the India-Australia series. The latest game, the third in the four-match series, they drew, meaning that it's all to play for in the final test match. Looking at how the two sides have played in the series so far, who do you think is favourite heading into that game?
I think naturally you have to say India, but I wouldn't rule out Australia. I think India, just because of the experience in subcontinental conditions, and I think Kohli's really due a score, to be honest. So, and also competitively, I think when it's on the line, I think India will really raise their game. But I've been really impressed with Australia and how they've played in the series. They've really shown a lot of fight and character, and sort of wanted to adapt to the conditions and sort of play long innings, get big scores and really put pressure on the Indians. And you've seen it throughout the series. There's been a lot of chat, and I think that's just because the Indians are under a lot of pressure, and that's all down to Australia because they've bowled really tight. And I think Lyon's been excellent and Akeem's been excellent as well. They haven't really let India off the hook where England did with Ali and Rashid.
Yeah, I think they've really impressed Australia, to be fair to them. I don't really like giving credit to the Aussies, but credit where it's due. They've been very good. I mean, Stephen Smith is... I was being a bit facetious by saying he's a flat-track bully, but I've always had the thing that he's been better than Australia, but for him to go out to India and get these massive scores, which he has been doing, is fantastic for him and for Australia. It doesn't look great for us going forward into the Ashes the way the Australians are playing at the moment. But no, I think I thought they'd lose 4-0. I genuinely did, because they've got such a poor record on the subcontinent in recent years. But credit to them, they've shown how you can play, and they've shown that India aren't as invincible at home as we think.
I think what's been noticeable about Australia is they haven't folded. Obviously, they've won the first test match, so it's a really good start, something to cling on to. But going into the third test match final day, two down already, still 100 runs behind, to manage to only lose four wickets in the day and survive for a draw, that's a massive result. And England, I think me and Joe were saying the other day when we saw the score, we wouldn't be surprised if Australia just folded and lost that game. But they really showed some mental strength there, which England wouldn't have done. And going head into the Ashes, I can only see Australia winning at this moment in time, although it's a long way away. But I think Australia do have a better leader as well, because Joe Root's obviously not taken over yet. So it could be an interesting summer ahead for England cricket.
Yeah, just to like completely go off track here slightly, going to that point of how you feel like England in the same situation would have folded. The ECB the other day came out telling both Root and Morgan that they wanted them to play a more stylish form of cricket, in the fact that if they're going to be defeated, they want them to go down hard and fighting, which perhaps, like you say, has been absent in the past few years. Do you think that's going to change their mentality and perhaps change English cricket in the coming few months?
I hope so, because so many times they've just said, oh, let's go out there and play an aggressive style of cricket, oh, we're 50 for 9 or something ridiculous, because they're playing at shots that they don't need to play at, especially when we're going for a draw. In the, I think it was the second or third test match, when Hamid came in and him and Cook batted out like 50 overs for 50 runs, and that was the only time in that series we showed any sort of resilience, and that's what we need to get back to. So obviously sometimes you need to counter-attack, like Stokes against New Zealand in 2015, but depending on the match situation, you can't just keep swinging, because you'll end up losing more than you win.
Makes you think back to Jonathan Trott era of
digging the trench.
Right, it's a true point though. We don't really have anyone other than Cook, and Hamid's done really well since he's come in, who's that sort of player who really grinds. We haven't got that sort of player who scores ugly runs. I mean, you've got Root at three, he's a fantastic player, but he's not a real grafter. Bairstow, Stokes, they're all stroke makers. So I think it would be quite good to see someone in that middle order who's literally just gets ugly runs and can battle it out.
Who's not Nick Compton either. But the thing is, they need to be one of those players like Trott who can dig in, but also, as I said, when the time's right, he could score runs. He could be a runner ball by just knocking it around like Joe Root is. You need that adaptability.
I don't really think it's about the players. I think it's about the mentality. I think, obviously, Trevor Bayliss came in. Everyone was talking about, we're going to play this aggressive Australian style of cricket. And I think that got to the head of the players a little bit. I mean, these players are talented enough. If they want to, they could block out for a day. It's just that they chose not to. And in their head, I think they got an idea saying, we've got to impress these English fans. We've got to go out and score 200 of 150 balls like Stokes did. And
Wanderers.
So I think... it's just a mentality change. I think they need to get back to playing more sensible cricket rather than sort of, we're going to play this one style of cricket and if we lose, we lose.
It's about time as well, because the squad, we keep saying they're learning. It's 2 years into the learning process now. At some point in the line, you just have to accept that we're not good enough and we need to change the players, or something needs to change with the mentality, as Turan said.
Yeah, I think the mentality works. It's worked for the limited overs squad, but perhaps less so for the test squad. Going on now to New Zealand versus South Africa. So in this one, New Zealand need to win the last game if they want to draw the series. What do you think is going to happen in that one? Do you think South Africa are going to claim the series 2-0, or do you think New Zealand have a chance?
I think they'll either draw or win South Africa. I think they are better than New Zealand at the moment. Their seam attack they've got too much for New Zealand's batting. I think there are question marks over New Zealand's top order. I don't think it's as strong as it has been, and they rely a lot on Williamson. And last week when he failed twice, they lost, which is no surprise. I think in the summer as well, it should be a fantastic four match series against South Africa, because I think their seam attack and our conditions will be pretty much brutal. So it should be a great series, and I think South Africa are in a pretty strong place at the moment.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Rabada in England, especially. I think he's a fantastic bowler. Definitely. Bowls 90 mile an hour, gets him moving both ways, and I think he can really trouble the English batsmen.
It depends what the pitches are, though.
Yeah, it was a bit flat in the summer, wasn't it?
Quite often, when we go to the Oval, it's such a dreadful test match, because they just make a pitch that gets 5 days for the money. Same with Lords quite often, and we're going away from English conditions just to flat track, and it's really boring at the moment.
Even
actually,
Headingley, I don't think we even saw.
Yeah, Trent Bridge seems to be the only place really at the moment where we consistently produce wickets.
Old Trafford as well. Yeah. It's got a lot of bounce, and the bouncy pitches are really exciting. Mm. They make what Test cricket a better game, I think.
Yeah. Do you think maybe the grounds need to be fined and like prosecuted a little bit more? Because if you think back to Trent Bridge, there was that one series where it was Alistair Cook bowled, the pitch was dead, and then they've brought it back in the past few years, that they had that thrilling Ashes test match where Stuart Broad destroyed the Australian batting lineup. Do you think maybe that would convince grounds a bit more to...
I think it all comes down to how much money they're making. I think it's down to the ECB to make sure that these counties are like being sort of funded in the right way, otherwise they will just produce pitches where there's going to be a 5-day board draw on it, because they're going to get the most gate receipts, which I'm not sure they can do a lot about that. I think they have this point system where if a wicket's too flat, you get some weird ranking like points against you or something. It doesn't seem to work, it doesn't seem to change anything, so I think it's all down to the ECB making sure that these counties are financially in a good place.
I think it's with the way they sort of give out the tests. I think there's a bidding system that goes on. I think that hampered Durham's chances, because they sort of put all their resources into getting test cricket, and then I think they end up with Sri Lanka in May, which got rained off, and that sort of put them down the pan, really. So I think there needs to be a different system in how they allocate test matches, so that the counties don't burden the initial sort of resources to finance it. Maybe the ECB should, and then the counties can pay them back if the test is successful.
I've seen, I think recently, that the ECB have given a ODI 2019 World Cup to the London Stadium, the Olympic Stadium. Yeah. So we're going to play a cricket match there, which is frankly ridiculous. One, because it's in the South again, and we already have lots of test matches in London. Not a vendetta against the South or anything, but we already have a lot of test matches there and ODIs there. And we've got all these, we've got 18 county grounds. Surely we can just fit in another game there instead of going to a massive stadium. Or if you're going to go to that big stadium, take one off the overall Oval or Lords. I don't think it's really fair on the smaller counties who could be hosting a smaller game, albeit, say, like Bangladesh, Afghanistan, something like that. But they still profit from hosting a game.
Yeah. And then finally, we'll round up going back to Australia and New Zealand, and we'll look at Steve Smith and Kane Williamson, who, well, alongside Virat Kohli, are probably the three leading lights in batsman captains at the moment. Who out of Steve Smith and Kane Williamson, who do you think is who in your opinion is the better captain?
Oh, she's a horrible host, isn't she?
I am. I'm gonna go there.
Ooh.
I think tactically Steve Smith.
Yeah.
I think he's just a bit more imaginative than Kane Williamson. I think batting wise though, definitely Williamson. I think we found out with Smith when the ball was moving, he got caught out in England. Yeah, he did score a 200 at
flat wicket, wasn't it?
Very flat oval pitch, and 100 at flat Lords as well.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think Smith better tactical captain, but Williamson as a batsman, he's scored runs everywhere. I think he's got 100 against every Test nation, Williamson, now, even including like Zimbabwe. so yeah, I think he's scored runs all around the world. Whereas Smith is a fantastic player, but he's yet to do it in England properly. So there's still question marks over him. But yeah, as a captain, I think I'd say Smith. Yes,
I love Kane Williamson. I think he is a better captain because he has a harder, maybe not a better captain, but he has a much harder job than Steve Smith. Steve Smith has a lot more resources available to him, and he has a lot of batsmen around him. So if he fails, as we said before, there's a lot of people to back him up. But for New Zealand, if Williamson fails, and Taylor's quite often injured now, they just fold. So he's got a lot more resources available to him, Steve Smith. So I'd probably go for Kane Williamson just on that basis.
I think Williamson's often compared to Brendan McCullum, who was like an inspirational leader for New Zealand, and I think he's struggled to sort of live up to sort of that hype that was around McCullum and what he did for the team.
McCullum was kind of a one-off though, isn't he? He's a once-in-a-generation kind of captain.
And player. He just galvanised the team, and that's the only reason they really got to that World Cup final, because obviously it was at home, but the whole nation got behind Brendan McCullum. That's
Perfect. I think that's everything. Thanks for listening.
Back next
week with another podcast.